Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lope today. Over the last 10 years, global malaria rates have fallen more than 25%, but the disease continues to kill almost a million people a year. Although most of those cases are in Africa, global health workers in Cambodia are on the front lines of a fight against a new drug-resistant strain of the disease. Joining me is Matthew Power. He's a contributing editor of Harper's Magazine. His article, Slipping Through the Net, appears in the April issue of the magazine, which comes out on the newsstands on March 27th. Matthew, pleasure to have you here today.
Thanks, Elliot.
Great. And it's a disturbing and hopeful story that you tell. And to tell it, you were in Cambodia for how long?
I spent about a month there working with, following people from the WHO around as they implemented this containment plan to try and stop the spread of a drug-resistant strain of malaria that's cropped up there.
And as hard as it might take, and hopefully we're a little bit after the lunch hour, can you describe how malaria affects the body?
Sure. Malaria has evolved with humankind over the last million years. It's a two-part stage. You have a plasmodium, which is a kind of single-celled organism that lives in a vector, a mosquito, called Anopheles, and is passed from the mosquito to humans. And this has been going on since at least a half million years of human evolution has evolved along with this as an almost constant presence. Malaria
killed. I just want to underscore that. Half a million years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To the point where in sub-Saharan Africa, people actually evolved natural defenses against it that were the natural defenses themselves, like sickle cell anemia, are a result of those, where it was a greater evolutionary benefit to get a chance of being sick than to be susceptible to malaria.
And what happens to someone who gets it?
You have a very rapid loss over the from your liver. Your blood cells are attacked by the Plasmodium parasite, and it causes anemia. Ultimately, the blood-brain barrier can be breached, and you get what's called cerebral malaria, which can lead to death. Most of the deaths today occur in sub-Saharan Africa, about 90% of them worldwide, and most of those are children and pregnant women.
If left untreated, is it always deadly?
No, actually, the body can often clear the parasite itself, but it has a huge huge mortality rate, and it's particularly dangerous for children.
And how is it treated generally today?
So there have been a host of different treatment options over the years. Beginning about 10 or 15 years ago, the most promising new drug is called artemisinin, which is a derivative of a Chinese plant called wormwood, sweet wormwood, and it it's used in a combination with other malaria drugs. Where it's used in a combination with other malaria drugs where the artemisinin has a very fast clearance rate in the body, and the other drugs which have been developed over the last 50 years sort of sweep up the remains of the malaria, the plasmodium in your blood. The frightening thing that's going on is that in 2007, a group of researchers found that resistance to this key drug was starting to show up.
And how long had this drug been effective?
It had only just begun being rolled out in the late 1990s by a sort of global consortium of health agencies.
So it was alarming to find out that it wasn't working with everybody.
This is the frontline drug right now that's being rolled out across Africa. There's something like 103 countries that are using it.
And you had described how malaria had become somewhat an obscure global health problem over the years. Was it just not as big a problem? It was being treated for a while?
It fell out of favor. It fell out of attention. And one of the things that I came to realize about the effort to eradicate malaria globally, is that as soon as funding and public interest drops away, it comes back very fast. There was an effort in the 1950s. Eisenhower made it one of his platforms for global health was to eradicate malaria, and they were using at the time chloroquine and DDT. And over the course of the 1960s, we all know what happened with DDT. It became sort of anathema, and chloroquine resistance developed actually from this same region of Cambodia. There was a WHO program during the 1960s that involved putting chloroquine into table salt, which rapidly pushed resistance forward.
Now, still, if I understand it right, 90% of the malaria cases are still in Africa, yet this drug-resistant strain is being found in Cambodia. Is this effort in Cambodia primarily because we're afraid it will go into Africa?
That is the great fear that they have. It hasn't as yet been noticed in Africa. It was first documented by these researchers about 5 years ago in Cambodia along this border region, which is... It was sort of the center of Khmer Rouge resistance in the years after the war, and they started seeing resistance to this drug. Partly this is because there's a very healthy private market there. There's a lot of low-quality and counterfeit anti-malarial drugs. So what you get is if someone is taking a dosage that's too low, that gives the malaria... a chance to breed resistance. So what would happen is people would take some of the drug, not enough of the drug, and it would then come back in a resistant form.
Why don't you talk about Bill and Melinda Gates, because they've really taken this up as a cause. What's their mission?
So the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is the largest private charity in the world. They gave out $3.5 billion last year for to fight poverty, to promote education, and to promote healthcare around the world. It's impossible to overstate what huge influence they have on global public health conversations. They drive the agenda and they really lead the conversation. So in 2007. At a malaria conference, Bill Gates announced his intention to wipe malaria from the face of the earth. Now, this has never happened ever. And the last time someone tried to do it in the 1950s was a colossal failure. So there was an enormous amount of skepticism. But because the Gates Foundation really does drive the agenda, and a lot of these agencies, a lot of these public health charities,
people will follow.
They have to. There's really not a lot of room to be a skeptic, because that's where the money is coming from. So when this resistance showed up in Cambodia, Gates put $22 million into a project to try and contain it, and that's what I went to go look at. So I was traveling around with people from the World Health Organization, from the Cambodian malaria authorities, and from a British malaria.
Tell the story of you actually going out on patrol. You were with a Dr. Habib and a drug inspector. What was that about?
So we went to a market. They have a Khmer drug inspector whose job is to go into these. One of the big problems is when artemisinin is sold by itself. They call it monotherapy. If it's not taken in conjunction with this other drug, that's a high chance of building this resistance to that specific drug. So they'll go. The Cambodian government banned use of artemisinin monotherapy. So they send out these drug inspectors. There's a huge sort of private market. This is very rural Cambodia along the border. There's a lot of like very small drug shops. People are going around buying and selling stuff that isn't necessarily official or could be expired.
It's not a Rite Aid.
Or could be fake. Yeah. In fact, there was a really interesting Interpol in 2006 did an investigation where they studied some of these drugs and found that a huge percentage of them were fake. Some of them had were tainted with precursors of the club drug ecstasy, so that they actually, which by inference, the drug makers decided that ecstasy and fake malarial drugs were of equal profit margin.
Well, this is horrible because they think they're getting helped,
yeah.
and it's actually in some cases because a portion of the drug is in there, it's actually making things worse,
right?
And building,
yeah,
building up resistance.
Some small amounts of artemisinin can be added to these fake drugs to give them to help them pass these tests. But if it's a subtherapeutic dose, then the person is not going to be helped, and it's only going to be...
And what would the drug inspectors do on the patrol you went? Would they arrest these people? Would they confiscate the drugs?
Well, no, we didn't see anyone selling them because they know very far in advance that the drug inspectors are coming. That's one of the problems is you're going around in a very sort of public way. It's hard to sneak up on them. And it's such a broad market that it's very, very hard to catch people.
And it seems so low tech to me, but the bed nets is still one of the best defenses, right?
Yeah.
Describe what that is.
So they have treated, they're called LLINs, long-lasting insecticide treated nets. And it's for $10, you can buy one of these nets. And they'll last for a year on a single treatment. You sleep underneath them, and it breaks the cycle of transmission. So the people who have these and sleep under them are not going to be able to be part of the transmission between the mosquito and the next victim. So they're largely effective if they're used. One of the big problems is that you can't get them to everybody, and there's no way to know whether people are using them properly or not. It's very hard to find these things out.
And you had met one Cambodian woman who used the bed nets, but she had indicated to you that her other ways of fighting off malaria were rice and prayer.
Yes.
So you're also dealing with a lot of local traditions in
right.
trying to fight this, right?
Yeah, you're dealing with a sort of lack of scientific understanding. And, one of the tragedies is some of these mythological beliefs can actually, help prevent malaria. Others of them aren't useful at all. But educating people is one of the chief things that they're trying to do, and it's very hard.
So where do we stand today? Is we've got this resistant strain, but is it on a growth or can it be contained?
The project is ongoing, and there's a new round of funding. Many millions more have been poured into trying to contain it, but it's very, very hard. Also, these are trans-border issues. You have Cambodia is a rapidly growing economy. There's huge population shift. There's people going from one part to another. It's very hard to keep track of the migrant farm workers. This region that I was in had grown in population by a factor of 10 over the last decade. So there's already been indication that the drug-resistant strain has spread to Burma, to Vietnam. I was in Papua New Guinea last summer and saw these same monotherapy drugs being sold in markets there. But if it gets to Burma, where there's a much, much lower public health authority, it's really a bad scene.
And we had read that George Clooney in his travels to the Sudan had contracted malaria
yes.
as well. And I hope you were always safe when you were there.
I mean, I'm a rich Westerner. I got to bring the nicest drugs that you can buy. And then the thing is that we don't have to worry about that as Americans. And that's why you have to stay conscious of it.
Globally.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an amazing article. I've been speaking with Matthew Power. He's a contributing editor of Harper's Magazine. Slipping Through the Net, his article about efforts to fight malaria in Cambodia, is in the April issue of the magazine. Matthew, thank you so much for joining us today on the second segment of Backstory.
Thanks, Elliot.
Leonard returns for tomorrow's show. He'll speak with Scott Wallace about his search through the Amazon to track down one of the last indigenous tribes there. Then Terrence Davis and Rachel Weisz discuss the new film, The Deep Blue Sea, A History of the World in 100 Objects takes a look at a statue of the Buddhist goddess Tara, and Please Explain is all about benzodiazepines, from their growing popularity to what they do to the brain. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. We had help today from Ellen Frankman, Jessica Miller, and Sarah Waltuck, and contributing producer Barbara Kahn. Andrew Dunn was at the audio controls. I'm Elliot Forrest, in for Leonard Lopate. Thank you so much for listening.